Hello and welcome to Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikaus. I founded the gallery Helium Kaue in Hamburg many years ago, and I also work as an artist under the name of Alex Diamond. This is the 12th edition of my podcast, and it's from a conversation with the art dealer and curator Rasmus Fischer. Rasmus joined the gallery Wolfson in 2012, and he has been putting together countless exhibitions and fair appearances of the Danish gallery since. As a partner to owner Kent Wolfson, who founded the gallery over 25 years ago, Rasmus has introduced a new breed of artists to the internationally acclaimed art space from Aalborg, way up north in Denmark. Driven by his passion for contemporary and urban art, Rasmus brought international stars like the American Al Mack or the German Henrik Beikirch to the gallery, but also discovered great young talents such as Volcano, Rune Christensen or Michael Tuckers, to name a few, and established them on the market. Helium Talk. Helium Talk. Besides his work for Wolfson, Rasmus has been invited to curate high-end exhibitions in locations such as Beirut, Kazakhstan and the USA. Rasmus has a very distinct approach to presenting and installing exhibitions, and a very powerful presence on the stages of the art market, be it in his home gallery or in art fairs all over the world. We talk about all this, and we discuss the oversaturation of an art market overflowing with galleries and art fairs and artists and imagery, and how to discover new talent in the days of social media, giving everyone a platform and the feeling of importance. Happy listening, and as always, I'm looking forward to your feedback by mail at heliumtalk@heliumkaue.com or any of the other channels where you can reach out to us.
Helium Talk. Helium Talk. It's difficult when you deal art if you are not able to talk to people and kind of make them laugh a little, make them think differently than they otherwise would, maybe, so they are ready to buy some art. And
but telling art is a little bit like storytelling, right?
It is. It's very much like storytelling. It's the way I, actually, the way I sell art or work with art, it's the way that I like buying art myself. I need the story behind it, the whole concept of storytelling, everything that's around the piece is the most often the most interesting for me, actually. It's sometimes I compare it to as when you see a soccer game or a football game or a boxing match, you cannot see it if you don't know the rules. And it's more interesting to watch Ronaldo play a game if you know how big a star he is and how much money he makes and how he does his hair, whatever.
Yeah.
All these things actually make it more interesting.
Yeah, so this is like also facts that you need to know when you present works.
Yeah,
so you're interested in the artist, the person themselves.
Yeah. It's very essential, actually. Most often it's essential to know a lot about the artist, to tell the stories and make people be interested in more than just the artwork. Because if they get these stories and they can tell the stories themselves or just part of it, then it adds value to it. When they put the piece at home, they want to impress their guests when they talk about their new art piece. They want actually to bring this more value to it themselves. So
I
think the stories are very important.
Yeah, I think it's adding a little bit of background to the pieces that it's not just technique and education.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that about, I think that's why, also one of the reasons why I'm doing these podcasts, you know, we can talk about these things and other people can listen in so they get these stories that the two of us usually just talk about when we're at the bar for a drink or a burger or anything, you know, so letting people a little bit into not our secrets, because
but the secret world of art,
in
a way, you know.
Well, it's basically just, you know, trying to get, you know, to listen into our conversation. And but how did it all start for you? How did you get into the art?
Yeah, it started really early, actually. I'm from Denmark, and my mother brought me on a vacation when I was 12, all the way up north in Denmark. And we went to a museum mm-hmm. where I saw a piece by a Danish artist, Wilhelm Freddy. And this sculpture was really crazy. It's a lady's head and it has a dick on the cheek. And I, as a 12-year-old, I just was blown away. I had no idea what the fuck was going on. And my mom tried to tell me it was about female suppression and all this Me Too today kind of thing, just from back in the days. And I was really taken aback by that. And when we got back to the cottage we were staying in, I ran down to the local grocery store and bought 3 or 4 cartoons. Mm-hmm. And that was how I kind of translated art into something that I had a concept about. And I then collected cartoons for 3 years, I think. And then when I was 15, I bought my first pieces. It was a series of prints by a Danish artist called Martin Bigum. And from there on, I've just been hooked on art, really.
So you came to the arts through collecting yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
It's probably good perspective if you're trying to convince other people to buy art when you're a collector yourself.
True, true. Yeah, and I think selling art is about sharing the passion. And if you have the passion for art, it's easier to sell it, I think. So I'm actually partly selling my own passion for art when I deal with people and try to convince them that they should buy some art.
I think it's something that your artists like to hear when you can go about with the whole thing with passion and not just with a checkbook in the back of your mind.
True.
Although even I think that that is basically also a pretty false statement that gallerists are purely money driven.
It's a false statement.
I don't know. No. Any actually of the people that I work with.
I know some.
There are some, but yeah. Yeah, but it's important that you try to prevent working with assholes.
True. But there is this part to it. Of course, it's nice to be idealistic and passionate about art and dealing art. But on the other hand, you need to, both as a gallerist to make money for yourself, you need the gallery to survive, but you also need the artist mm-hmm. to make enough money to actually keep the drive and keep wanting to be an artist. Mm-hmm. So the money part of this setup is very important.
Yes, very.
But I think if you get too focused on that, at mm-hmm. least for my part, it won't work. Mm-hmm. Not for me, at least. Not for me.
So from collecting and the passion to becoming an art dealer, how did that happen?
How did that ever happen? Well,
because you've done other stuff.
I've done other stuff. Yeah. I'm actually... I'm a computer programmer and a health nutritionist, which is so far from anything to do with art. But it led me to open my own small company that was doing fairly okay for some years. And that gave me the means to start collecting more and more seriously and getting really into collecting and visiting more galleries and stuff like that. And when I was around 30, I think, my company was doing okay, and I was getting really tired of working with it, and I kind of needed to do something else, and I was spending most of my spare time looking at art, visiting artists, and I've always had this real big drive and passion for visiting artists mm-hmm. at their studios. And I was doing that more and more because I had the time to do it, and I was buying the art pieces. And then I knew of this one big, great, nice gallery in Denmark that, in my view, was doing really well. But mm-hmm. I also thought that they needed some new blood and some new artists. So one day I told the owner that he should let me curate a show in his gallery, and that's about 7 years ago. And
that's Kent Wolfson.
Kent Wolfson, yeah, at the Gallery Wolfson where mm-hmm. I work today. And I kind of just never left the place. I'm still there and part owner today, and really...
He didn't let you out of the door.
He didn't let me out, and I didn't leave myself either.
That's a really nice combination there. I it's definitely sometimes, you know, sort of, it's for me, sometimes it's probably very easy to just take all the decisions by myself. But I think you guys have a very good dynamic because you are, you come from a different approach. And you also both represent different kind of artists.
We do, yeah.
And there's a long history with Wolfson. The one thing that I really appreciate about a gallery like that, it's just like, what, 25 years?
26 years this 26 year.
26 years. Yeah. And Ken's father is also a gallerist. Yes. So like, there's a lot of history there. Yeah. And so I think the young blood, the fresh blood, sorry, my tongue is still...
Yeah, mine too.
From last night. just for everyone to understand, we had a great opening last night at the gallery here of the exhibition Crisp. And it was very long. and liquid. But you know, so like the young blood that you bring into the gallery, I think in the beginning it was also a lot of street art graffiti influence that you brought to.
I did.
But it has leveled out somehow.
Completely leveled out. You know, it's a lot of a big part of the lineup that we work with is actually what I like and my taste, and my taste evolves too. And it's not that things I worked with 7 years ago is not still good. It's just I get a taste for more and different things. It develops along the time.
Would you say that the taste that you bring in there, because you know, so like you represent artists that are very different as well.
Very different.
So it's not just one kind of artworks, but do you think that works specifically well in Denmark or across the borders? Or
I think actually it works really well in Denmark. Mm-hmm. Maybe probably everywhere. I don't know, but in Denmark, partly because we're such a small country, so we cannot focus on just pop art or fine arts. I think we need our clients to need different stuff, and for myself, I like all kind of different art too. So I cannot limit myself to just work with pop art or street art or whatever you call it. And I think there's so much quality across all the different types of art, and that's just too interesting for me not to work with. I can't just say okay.
I
can't limit myself to do that.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, I know what you mean.
So I have to, for my own sake and for my client's sake, I need to work with many different types of art and artists. That gives the best result in the end, I think.
How do you find new artists?
Networking, friends of friends. The internet has a huge influence today, especially when you log on through Instagram, you see so much new art, which I think is beautiful. Because 10 years ago, when you did not have the social platforms, it was quite difficult for new talent to find its way to a gallery. Because there's so much, I don't even know what to call it or what it's called in English, but it's the galleries have a lot of influence and power in the way they choose art, and Instagram kind of killed that power a little bit, because now everybody can present their work and get a huge follower base and get their art out there, and that has opened up a new pool of talent for a guy like me to work with.
Yeah, I personally think I personally think that the markets are terribly oversaturated, and there's a huge overkill in visual images that are thrown at you that you cannot separate from the other. So it's kind of
it's difficult
still
to
make. At the end of the day, you still make the decision to pick one of 20 million. Now it's now, because maybe 10 years ago, you went to an art school, you saw new artists, you went to exhibitions, you saw new artists. You got catalogs, you went to art fairs, you went to other exhibitions, and you found talent. So let's say
I still do that.
If you have a strong month, you see like probably 100 to 200 new artists, but now you open your phone and you see 5,000 new artists every second.
It's true.
And then when you go as a gallerist and pick one of them, then it was one of 100. Now it's one of a million.
Yeah.
It didn't get easier for artists to become, maybe to become seen and become likes. And so, but I think the value of that is totally overrated in my opinion.
Fair.
So
I disagree. Yeah. I politely disagree.
Yeah.
No, but I hear, of course, your argument, and I understand what you mean completely. Because it's not it can confuse your eyes sometimes when there's so much to actually look at and choose from. But that's kind of our job, yours too, as a gallerist. You know, we have the experience, we spend so much time, and sometimes you see the talent before the talent even recognizes itself, and then you can work with
it. The bottom line and the result is basically the same. I'm just saying, well, then you pick one of 100 or 1,000, now you pick one in a million.
Yeah.
And then this way, the gallerist again becomes kind of, it's an ugly word and I don't really like it, but in a way, a gatekeeper. Somebody says,
it is okay, a gatekeeper.
You can come inside.
It is.
You know, but it also calls for a different kind of approach to finding new art. As you said, you know, finding new art through the internet. And I mean, the internet is there for quite some time, so it was possible,
true.
You know.
It's true.
But it's also, I don't know, I mean, then you pick an artist and the artist doesn't work, you look for the next artist on Instagram, or what do you do?
No, it's not like that. I look for new art all the time, and it's not just Instagram, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
When I travel for art, when I, everything, most everything in my life is actually in some ways, some respects, based around art.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have in the back of my head, maybe 50, 100, 200 people that I think maybe one day I should work with this. So if one artist for whatever reason don't work out in our gallery, I always have this consciousness of where to go and who to work with, and so yeah, I don't know, it's an ongoing work looking for new art. You have to do it all the time, actually.
Yeah, but then you have also and Wolfson makes a lot of shows, a lot of exhibitions.
Yeah, I think we have 8 or 9 openings a year.
Yeah. Yeah. But also a lot of group shows.
A lot of group shows too, yeah. So. Yeah. Well, we're based in a smaller city up north in Denmark, but it's quite a large gallery, and we have a huge client base. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of private decorations, you can call it. Mm-hmm. I curate a lot of private homes, so I need a lot of good art all the time. Mm-hmm. And I need new art all the time, actually. So yeah.
You also, you just said that. It's a nice point that you, with the gallery, you go to clients' houses and you decorate the houses. So you load the truck full with work
completely
that you think should work and works well together. And then you go into the houses and then you decide with the owners together?
Sometimes, of course, because I always have to respect that the home I'm going to, it's when I leave, they're still living there. It's mm-hmm. still their home. So they need to be to like it.
Okay,
I mean, of course. But I actually like to just have free hands, so to speak, and do what I feel is right and hang the art the way that it should be in the room. And it's not always that people let me do that, of course, and that is completely okay, and I totally respect that. Yeah. But fortunately, I have quite a few clients that recognize my talent.
Yeah.
No, but they
it is a talent, of course.
Yeah, but they feel like we mm-hmm. people in the business, we spend so much time actually perfecting this, mm-hmm. becoming good at doing this. So they and that is what they are buying to me mm-hmm. doing my job. So for them to actually tell me how to do it, most often maybe don't make sense.
Yeah, it's also a different perspective that you can bring into a house when you're an experienced, you know, sort of art handler, art dealer. You know,
completely.
So many things you know it works together, and the environment, the different environments that you're actually installing the art in is probably also influencing what kind of work
it does.
That is something actually that I'm a little bit jealous of, because that's a nice aspect of the business. If you We don't really have that in Germany.
No.
We don't. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of people who call themselves art agents or art consultants, and I believe that some of them really would like to do that, and some of them do. But it's very rare. I mean, I think from what I know from you guys, this is a very important part of your business, and not something you do occasionally.
No, I do it several times a month, actually. Yeah. Just I have one. I leave for Denmark today because I have a big hanging, private hanging Sunday, mm-hmm. and I have one again Monday,
mm-hmm.
and again one probably Thursday or Friday next week. So it's a lot.
It's also nice because I like, you know, I mean, when somebody buys an artwork, mine or a work from one of the artists that I'm representing from here, then the people pick it up here, we put it in a box and ship it somewhere. But you are actually there where the art ends up.
And that,
That's actually really nice. As I said, I'm a little bit jealous.
Being so passionate about art, for me, it's actually really, really nice to first off meet the artist, start working with his work, meet the client, selling the client his work, then taking this art piece, bringing it to the client's home, meeting, bringing them together in their setting and putting it on the wall. I'm there all the way through. And that's really, it's a nice journey actually for the art piece. And when you really just love the art, it's so nice to be part of the whole food chain or whatever you call it.
Also, you know, through the experience of this, of the whole, you know, sort of chain that you just described, by now, with your experience, you're sometimes maybe in an artist studio and you see that the painting is developing in your mind, you already see where this might end up.
Very much so. Yeah.
A little bit of fortune teller. Yeah, it's kind of nice. Yeah, I like that. I like that aspect of the work.
But sometimes...
I also like the openness of the clients to say, do this.
Yeah.
You know, he has the key to my house. You know, and
but it took some time before people actually let me do this. Now I'm at a comfortable place where a lot of people, a big group of people, clients, whatever, they kind of like that, they want me to do it. Because it's kind of like, not a thing, but it's I don't know how to say this without sounding, you know, too full of myself or whatever, but they like me to do it because they've seen other places that it works well. So it's easier today than it was 6 years ago.
It's actually, didn't one of your clients buy some work here last year at the gallery, took it with him, and then you went to his house and installed the art that he bought here?
Copenhagen.
That's also a very nice story, I think.
It's true.
I think you sent me a text then. I'm hanging your work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very nice. Another aspect of the business that we're in, the sales business, something that we've both privately spoke a lot about, and actually how we met was on an art fair. So like we met in Basel, I think.
Exactly,
2015 on the fair.
Yeah.
You had, we were still installing when you already had very big smiles on your face because it was already sold out.
Yeah.
One artist, right? Who's the artist you were?
Jakob Ransau.
Yeah. And that's where I met you guys. And so fairs are an important aspect of your business.
Yes and no. It has been really important the last 5 years. Right now, to me at least, I think there's too many fairs and too many galleries and too many people wanting to do this that we love to do. I understand that they like it and they want to do it because it's a beautiful job. And but there's just too much of it. I spent 10 days in Miami in December of last year. During the Miami Art Week, and I can cope with seeing a lot of art. That's okay for me. But it was such an overwhelming feeling of just too much. Mm. And there's, I think, like 25, 30 art fairs just that one week in Miami, and 3,000 galleries and 20,000 artists.
Yeah, and also like 2 million people.
2 million people, and then now it's in, there's in Basel, and it's everywhere now. There's art fairs everywhere. That said, it's still important, and we have created our own art fair up north in Denmark, and that works really well. Then we can invite the galleries that we like to see on the floor, and we can invite our extended client list and make a big party and celebrate art and everything. So it's very important, yes, but at the same time, it's to me at least, it's too much at the moment.
Yeah, one of the reasons why, I mean, we've done Helium Cover, we've done many, many fairs over the years, and for a certain stretch of the history of the gallery, we did the whole circus with starting of the year in New York, and then Basel, then Miami. But that was a time when actually when we went there and the truckload of work we shipped over stayed there.
Yeah, it was sold.
Most of it, at least. Yeah. And it was so much easier to moving art and to excite the people. But that was the time when in Basel, in Miami, for example, when we went there, I think there was six art fairs at the same time. And I was like, 25?
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of them, you know, sort of dealing with the same kind of art.
There, there's so many art pieces. My girlfriend actually told me that, and I hadn't thought about it like that, but you are actually very, very lucky if somebody picks an art piece that you have to buy, because there's an enormous amount of art pieces to pick from. And I mean, it's difficult. It's have to have your selling game on to get something sold right now, and that's okay. It don't have to be easy, but it's just too much. I mean,
Also, I mean, for me, it's super exhausting. You know, being on a fair for several days, not just
that.
I mean, of course, physically, because you know you're on your feet most of the day, and you start your day very early, and usually ends quite late, and for 24 hours, maybe except the few hours that you find sleep, you're just thinking about how to move the art.
Yeah.
And there are these stretches where nothing happens.
Completely.
But you're still, it's not like, okay, there's 3 hours, nothing on the fair. I take a nap or read a book or watch a film. It's like you're still thinking about how to improve that. Then you're on your phone and think, I didn't ask this guy already. Yeah, this work here. Yeah, maybe I rehang these pieces. Maybe it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it's I mean, that's really draining you.
It is.
And I stopped doing that when our second son was announcing himself in this world. And I said, I'm not doing this to myself anymore.
No.
Not with the little, you know, so not with the high rate of potential failure that you have, you know.
Yeah.
But I still kind of like the idea of these smaller things that you said. Like your art fair up in Aalborg is called North.
Yes.
Which is also a good name for an art fair up north.
Up north.
And that is like, how many galleries are there?
15-20 galleries.
Yeah. So that's still...
And there's no other fairs at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And that's an idea that you and Ken developed at some point. So let's do this.
Yeah. 3 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
It just kind of made sense. There was the whole art scene in Denmark, as in the rest of the world, was breaking up, and new fairs, new stuff, new art fairs everywhere. And as an answer to that, we made our own art fair. It makes no sense, of course, but it does, because in our part of Denmark and our small part of the art world, there were no fairs. And Denmark being a fairly wealthy country, and our part of Denmark being a fairly wealthy part of Denmark, there's a lot of clients and a lot of money and a lot of people wanting to buy art. And they didn't necessarily travel to go see an art fair. So they didn't see art fairs. And so we brought one to them instead. And it has been an enormous success. It's been hugely successful.
Also, you're bringing in the competition to your doorstep.
We do that too, but I don't mind the competition at all. I mean, I tell my best clients, I tell them, go look at art at other galleries as well.
Sure.
Because you need to kind of find your way through art. And it makes no sense to just only buy art from me. I have a lot of clients that choose to do that and put me in front and let me choose what is actually worth buying and hanging. And they need this. They choose me and the gallery and Kent to kind of screen the art scene for them, because they cannot make sense of all this art coming out. But still, you should go look at other galleries. I go look at other galleries. You are a competition to my gallery, you know. But I still love it. Love coming here.
I think it's super beneficial for the business.
It is.
You have ties to other galleries.
It is.
And I mean, in our case, we share some artists, but it's also that I have clients that they cannot always buy from me, because I can't offer all the art.
Of course, you can.
Could be interesting for them.
Of course.
And if you see some piece here and you like it, and then I like to recommend you another artist, because also, you know, it's of course you should, you know, so of course it's competition, but I have good friends here in Hamburg too that run galleries, and we invite each other over and do some stuff. Like, you know, if you go on an art fair anywhere in the world, you have competition left and right.
You do.
But is it also, it's probably quite good to also meet the clients of other galleries when you do a fair like that.
Of course it is.
But is it only Danish?
It's more trustworthy though to not say that you are the only gallery where you have good art. Because everybody can make out that that's not the truth, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean,
but is it only Danish galleries?
It has been so far, yeah. Okay. It has been so far.
So when we go up there in what, September?
October, September.
It will be the international touch?
No, this year we will open up for maybe 5 international galleries. Yeah.
I bring Melvin, he kills in sales.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Just do it. Just do it.
They all want to buy from him.
Yeah. Then you will only be invited this year.
It's kind of nice. You know, we've tried, I think, Art Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Couple years ago,
which died out actually.
We were actually in the year when it was dying.
That was the last year, wasn't it?
We had, that was super nice to us. We had like I think the best location, the best spot in the whole fair. We had a good booth, but not much interest. And that was also when they tried to branch out internationally. Danish collectors really like to buy from Danish galleries. That was my
result. They're very loyal.
Yeah,
they're very loyal.
And then what happened then, which was good for us, was that Danish gallerists brought their clients to us.
Yes,
they were like, "What? They're not coming to you, so we'll bring
them." Yeah, we'll bring them. Yeah.
Maybe there's like there was the introduction, and since then, I must say, we've always had Danish clients here in Hamburg, you know, traveling through, coming with the family, checking us out, visiting us and buying the pieces of art. But I think in the last years, I think when the good thing about, you know, going to Denmark, showing there at the art fair and also like our cooperation is that we're a good visiting city for people from Copenhagen.
Oh,
from
Denmark. Danes love Germany and Hamburg. And
so we have a lot of Danish clients by now. Well, a lot, but you know, considering the size of the gallery and the size of our market.
That's just beautiful. You owe me money then.
Sure. How much? Well, you can take a higher commission from sales. Sell my work, you know. And you know, with the whole currency exchange thing that you guys have up there with the krona and me with this weird euro thing, you could just make up prices and just charge them twice for my work and just give me a quarter of it. Yeah, you know?
That makes sense. That would be good.
No, nobody knows that anyway.
No,
I think you're sometimes too close to the microphone, but I mean,
okay,
I'll work it out.
I'm a novice in this,
but it's the thing. I mean, I like talking with my hands, and you too. I think it's part of what we do as in that part where we are the salesperson.
Mm.
The passion that we have in talking about is not just, it's also our movements and
it's the whole body that talks, and
it's also one thing that I've noticed about you right from the beginning when we initially met. There's, if you talk about sales with other gallerists, it's usually like on an art fair, they're all doing fantastic and it's amazing and it's beautiful. And
you hear that. You hear that. They're all lying.
Off. And you're a very honest person in success and it's not failure if you don't sell art. You know, sometimes you just can't move it. But you know, when you come back from Miami, you say, "That was stupid." Or when we met, it was like, "Shit, you know, the fair hasn't even started and I've sold all this work," and putting figures to it. And people really don't like to do that.
No,
and you like to do that. And I think that's, there are a couple of galleries that I know that I can talk so freely about the business. Like Jonathan Levine is one of the super honest people. And to me, at least, I mean, we're kind of friends, but when we talk about these things, it's, this show made this and this show did, we share, for example, Victor Castillo as an artist, and then it's really interesting to know how does he do in New York, how does he do here. And when we do the show, it's Jonathan says, "How was the show, you know, and how much did you make?" And we talk figures. And that's really, really helpful when you talk to other people in the business when there's not all this bullshit around.
But I hear so many success stories and I know they lie, you know. It makes no sense to me, and I don't. I mean, we are doing well. We sell well, but we fuck up and sell really bad sometimes too. And it's why not just say it as it is? I mean, it's just how it happens.
Yes, also you kind of have to. It's the only way to be able to adjust to those things.
Completely,
you know.
Completely.
Yeah, you know, it's. it's a weird business, I think, sometimes.
It's a very weird business.
You have this passion and you have the total irrationality of everything we do. There's this dude and he makes a painting. He maybe even studied 4, 5, 6 years, maybe went to remote countries and lived in a cave. Just to get to a point where he or she thinks that's the right expression that I'm doing. Then there's others who work really, very organized and concentrated and focused and then we take the work, place it in an environment, in a wall or something, and try to find somebody, convince somebody to buy it. That's a very irrational thing.
It's very,
because nobody actually needs it.
But the thing is, with art, it doesn't fill your stomach when you're hungry.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you warm in the winter when you're freezing. It actually gives you nothing but pleasure when you look at it, or a feeling when you look at it. So it's a very strange product, actually.
Well, I mean, if you talk to people that are in the arts, they will all disagree and say it also puts warmth in your heart and all these things. And
I know.
For some people, food on the table. But it's if you talk to people outside, it mostly just like,
When
I have when I say I'm totally stressed out, we had so much work to do, and they're just like, really?
Yeah, it's true.
What work?
But one of the aspects of dealing art that I really love is when I meet a not yet client that don't give a shit about art, that can't see why he shouldn't just put a poster or just nothing on his wall, and actually awakening the passion and passion in him, and taking him to where he will actually spend money on buying something for his wall. That is one of the most beautiful aspects of my job, actually.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I have a lot of people that actually like to come to maybe to the openings.
Yeah.
They like the atmosphere, but they could never think about it. Yesterday at the opening, there was this one guy who bought a small work, last year at our anniversary show, Cowboyland. And he's coming to all the shows since, and the last exhibition here, he bought two pieces, and he brought a friend of his, and she also bought a piece.
That's beautiful.
And
he
came by picking it up and said, I'm going to be here on Thursday. I'm really looking forward to this. And when you see that happening, that when you've actually reached somebody, because it's surrounding yourself with beautiful things, with art, and it's different to the poster or any decoration element like a sofa.
It's different
because we come back to what we started this with. It's a story, and if we look around in this exhibition, you have so many different stories in here. Because we have like, I don't know, 15 artists and over 50 works, around about 50 works, you can spend a lot of time in here. What I see as my privilege, that's why I still do this sometimes nerve-wracking split of doing my own art and running the gallery still, is because I just love to be surrounded by all these stories. And I have the privilege of being here all the time, of receiving the work, of talking to the artist, of looking where it works best, of having people coming and talking about these things. So I basically live with every piece of art that's going through this gallery for usually a month or longer, and I think that's one of the most beautiful aspects of this job. But we should never forget it's also a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. I think it's actually a lot of people kind of think that it's really a hot job, a really very nice job to be an art dealer, an art curator. It's fashionable. Mm-hmm. It's what young people kind of think they want to do. And it looks really romantic from the outside. You travel, you party, you work with these eccentric artists. You meet rich people. It's, you know, all this kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter is it's just hard work most of the time.
Yeah.
It's just hard work. Mm-hmm. And the nights where you cannot sleep because you make no money, and it's just hard work most of the time, really. So you really, if you want to work in art, if you want to, not being an artist, but if you want to run a gallery like yourself or make shows, curate shows, whatever, you really need to really want it, because it's a hard work. I mean,
do you want your kids to grow up and work in art? You have a son that's who's six?
He's seven.
You have a baby that's...
I actually would say I have no... plans for him in my head. Yeah. If you want to do it, I would support it.
Yeah.
But if you don't, I completely understand that too.
Yeah,
he just won't be my son then. No.
Yeah, he just doesn't get any artworks.
So. No.
I think it's, but it's like when you surround yourself with art and you have, as a kid, you grow up in that environment, you already have a different connection to the art than
you do.
If you know, sit down. And I think our kids, they have a good understanding of it. I mean, I have the privilege that Melvin is working here now, but it's also, you know, for a period of time because he's going to university and study, and Lorenz lives his own life at some point. But right now, for a year now, we're running this as a family business, which is beautiful.
Yeah, you know? Well, that is just beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
But he wants to become a sports journalist, and I totally understand that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
But his room is also full with works. You know. Yeah. He's actually got a couple of posters, silkscreen posters, of his name, Melvin's, and you know, we both like the band and stuff.
Yeah.
But he also has a bunch of original art, and
and
when we're here, and sometimes, and I said, okay, especially with my work, you know, when there's something that I don't necessarily like, and he likes it, or if there's a work coming back that's been around, you know, you have, as an artist, you have some works that go around,
always,
and then they come back, and then they're still not sold, and other people say, oh, is that not sold, and you don't know yourself, and then I said, maybe it just has to get off the market at this point, and then Raven always says, can I have it then?
Yeah.
Which, in a way, is, you know, sort of also a nice thing to just pass those pieces on and know like nobody's interested in. But it's funny. Sometimes we have like these bricks, you know, they're beautiful pieces and you have the story. And when you see them first, also from other artists, you think, wow, this, it will be with me 5 minutes and then it's gone.
Yeah,
and then
like
5 years later,
you
still have it in your storage, you know.
But some art pieces just need to find the right owner. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always. And I've noticed actually that maybe my taste, private taste, and for my own collection is weird or something, but when I do a show, and I kind of have my favorite piece amongst the pieces that's in the show, and that's most often the last piece that is sold or is just never sold. So I don't know why, but that's just how it is.
Yeah, but your collection is probably quite large by now, right?
Yeah, relatively large. Yeah.
So it's a lot of bigger works or mostly smaller works?
Both. More smaller pieces than large pieces,
Do you have a piece by almost every artist that you're working with or showing with? Or because in the beginning I had that, but...
No,
I don't, it's impossible.
It's impossible, I can't say that I do. I don't have work from all the artists I work with, no. I actually don't.
But that's also not the aim of, or the goal of the
That's not the aim of the collection. It's not the aim of why I work with it. And I love a lot of art that I don't necessarily hang at home because it's difficult. My collection is more driven by passion in the sense that if I see the right piece that I need for my collection, I will, if I can afford it, of course, pick it up. But it doesn't matter if it's one of my own artists.
Yeah.
I love all my artists, otherwise I wouldn't work with them. But it's not the same as I love all the pieces they make.
Yeah.
And sometimes the one or the 10 pieces that I really like from one of my artists were sold to somebody else. Mm. And then, of course, I cannot pick that one up.
So if you have an... if you work with an artist, like you decide to work with... I don't know, say Volcano, you find his work, you see his artwork, you start working with the artist. Is that a relationship that you try to extend for many, many years and become more or less exclusive? Or how do you do that from a, because that's probably what some people are sometimes interested in. How does a gallery actually work with an artist?
I can only talk for myself, but how do I actually work? I actually don't have kind of a plan or tactic or anything. It's many of the artists that I work with, a gallerist like yourself, when you're not an artist, tends to become my friends because we share something and we have something in common and we have a common passion for art. And when I start working with an artist, I just hope that I can... sell his stuff, his or her stuff, and lift this up to where it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And if I fail, the artist will move on at some point, or I will. But from my hopes are that this, every time that it will be something that we will do together for the rest of our life. Mm-hmm. When life hits and somebody becomes a star, when mm-hmm. something happens, we have a big, really well, good gallery in my eyes, but it is in Denmark. And if a major gallery from New York or Germany wants this artist, it doesn't matter how good friends we are, whatever. I'm not even going to get mad. I can understand. It's like a football team. Yeah, you know, sure. If you play for a good club in Denmark and Bayern München or St. Pauli mm-hmm. comes and say, hey, we want you. Yeah. Well, of course, you're moving on. So, but for me, it's really relationship driven in a way. I mean,
I think with the artists that I've worked with that went on to become bigger and famous and rich and wealthy and artists, I have a good relationship to all of them.
Yeah, me too.
The artists that I don't have a good relationship with are artists that came at some point maybe disappointed or or illoyal.
Yeah,
you know. But
I have a good relationship. I just had this recently very nice experience. One of my artists from I started showing maybe just 5-6 years ago. ECB Hendrik mm-hmm. Beikirchen, German mm-hmm. artist, has become quite a star. He's mm-hmm. doing really really well, and he has moved on to play with the big guys, and we still get pieces by him, but it's very difficult, and we get maybe if we are lucky one piece a year. Mm-hmm. But because we have this friendship and work relationship, he invited me to come and see his museum show in Marrakesh in Morocco, mm-hmm. and not because I'm making him money or anything, but because we shared a passion mm-hmm. and we became friends. Mm-hmm. And that's just so nice. I'm not mad at him for moving on and becoming rich and famous. Yeah. I mean, that's beautiful.
It's the minority of the artists that we work with.
It's the minority that actually... Yeah.
All artists.
Yeah, of all artists in the world. So
yeah, it's nice to see when that actually pans out and works out.
Because beautiful when it happens.
Usually it gives... It enables... That's also one part of our job, to enable artists to... You know, sort of make most of their potential by securing the funds to do that, and by helping them being seen and being visible. Yeah, and then it would be stupid to try to tie someone to your gallery.
It's stupid. You can't do that.
Because that's all we're trying to do. We're trying to make them big, and then of course at some point you have to.
And if you succeed, that's, you know, then it happens. Yeah. And I'm actually privately, professionally, just really, really fucking proud mm-hmm. when it happens. And I've been lucky enough that it has happened to 2, 3, 4 of my artists, that they have actually been working with me and the gallery in Kent and has moved on and became and are becoming stars of the art scene today. And it makes me immensely proud, really, really proud.
Yeah, rightfully so. Yeah, it's interesting to see when that's also one part of why I started with this question, how you work mm-hmm. with artists. I think it's a nice thing to see the development of artists over the years.
Yeah, that is a beautiful thing.
That you're
thing
pretty
too.
Close to the cycles how they develop. You know? For me, it probably would, of course, financially it would be nice to just pick up artists that are already established. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of boring.
Yeah, I hear ready. You. Completely.
It's like getting a 12-year-old baby.
Completely. That's so well said. Yeah. It's true. It's just true. And I like working with the talent. I think I tell myself that I can recognize talent. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong, but that's what I tell myself, and that's where I come from. And I love finding this spark or seed of talent mm-hmm. and working with it, influence it, making people like it, seeing it grow and becoming something that people even ask for. And that's where I'm in the business, because mm-hmm. that's what I love. I couldn't work with like Jeff Koons or mm-hmm. I don't know, whomever is a big star. It's not for me.
No.
It's just not for me.
No.
It's boring. Makes no sense. Yeah. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. But that's what people are sometimes outside of this business and visit the gallery. They don't often see that there's a huge gap between us as like mid-level galleries and like the upper 1% galleries that you know make all the billions on the art market. That there's such a huge gap. Then they read in paper. What do you read in papers? You read that Jean-Michel Basquiat has been sold for $110 million, he's for example one of the biggest influences for me in terms of art.
Yeah, he was just a beautiful artist.
When I saw his work first, that's when I thought, Jesus Christ, he does cartoon like me. He's basically from a similar environment, and he's huge. You know, I can become an artist with the shit that I'm doing.
He opened the eyes for a lot of people.
Yeah, but. You know, but there's a lot of stories why that happened, also, you know, a lot of speculation and being at the right time and the right place, which is still the case. But now, today, there are some wealthy idiots spending so much money on a piece of art. In this case, I think it's a Japanese investor, but he at least puts it into a museum so people can still see it.
Yeah,
it's fair and fine. But I mean, sometimes. And there's such a huge gap. And this has nothing to do with what we're doing. Nothing.
Not at all. It's two different worlds.
Yeah. And when, you know, it's also the. What's his name? The famous artist who did the skull with the diamonds. Jesus Christ.
It's Damien Hirst.
Damien Hirst for me is a perfect example of the market that calls itself art market but has nothing to do with art anymore. It's pure investment and craziness.
Exactly.
He opened a show in New York. I think he's with Gagosian, right? And then his works are so insanely expensive, and then the evening all of them were gone. Yeah, and they're extremely boring. The exciting part
I've seen a few good pieces he did.
He apparently painted them themselves again for over a year. And he also has an Instagram account where you can see nicely produced videos of him painting. Even the shirt that he wears looks like it's not like splattered over when you work.
Looks different.
So, and then people go nuts and crazy about this. And that has got nothing to do with what we do. It's interesting for me. I sometimes read these stories. I find it super funny.
It's business. It's just business.
Yeah,
it's
but just it's, business.
It's just business. It's a little sad. I hear you. It's a little sad. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you have, you know, artists that we work with that also have super nice stories to tell, but they're on a much more realistic level.
Yeah.
You know, they actually still touch you and others. So.
But at the level where Damien Hirst and Coons and some of these guys, it's their clients too. It's rich people showing off to each other, buying, and the pieces are circulating in the same, you know, ring of people with a lot of money. And you know, it's I don't know. I just think it's boring.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, well, that's always an interesting aspect of the business, but. But that's also what mostly, you know, takes place, and at least in Germany. I don't know how the scene in Denmark is in regards to magazines and newspapers. Here in Germany, it's very difficult for a gallery or an artist to get into newspapers and magazines. And the art magazines that we have, of course, usually also focus mostly, not purely, but mostly on the top level galleries, level market. So they write about the Art Basel, but about probably no other fair in Miami at the time. So in that place, in that way, they become also irrelevant for my business. So I'm not interested. Yeah, but is that in Denmark is different?
It's the same. It's the same. And Denmark being a small country, probably in a big country too, I don't know. But I think it's. I've been really tired of this dynamics where the art critics at some of the newspapers, they have really good friends that are artists and they get a free piece from them. And then they always hype them and write about them. And if you don't like what they write and point out that it might be just fucking stupid what they're saying, then they're not writing about you artists. So I think it's so boring.
So how do you go on about marketing from the gallery? Do you buy advertisement or?
No, we do. But It's hard work. It's mouth to mouth, mouth to ear, maybe you call it. It's meeting people. I get a good client. He tells his friends that this was a good experience. We don't do a lot of advertising. We do it, but it's not like something we really prioritize. Yeah. We don't. No.
Then the web, online newsletter, those things.
Yeah, we have social media. We have newsletters. We do all this. We do all the traditional stuff, you know. Yeah. But
I think it's a lot of direct contact. Also, you know, approaching people directly and.
Yeah, that's how I sell art. At least, I mean, I sell art in the personal connection between people.
Yeah.
And I can have that on a chat as well, actually. That can work really well. If you can make people smile and laugh while you chat, that'll work too. Yeah. That'll work too.
So any big plans for this year at the gallery or?
No.
Except for the fair.
I was just going to say the fair, of course, and then the shows we have planned for the rest of the year.
Going to Miami again this year or not?
No, I'm not going to Miami, no.
Bailing out on it.
I'm completely tired and filled up and tired of Miami at the moment. Yeah.
Yes.
It's just
grown out of proportions.
Completely. It's boring. If I am going to fairs or exhibitions, it will be in like collaborations with you. Mm-hmm. It's going to be our own fair or something. Art like that, not not like what everybody else would do, but what we think would be interesting to do. And
if we decide to go up to show at your fair with Helium Cowboy, I'm pretty sure I'm making so many more new connections.
You will, and you'll complete
and sales than I can do in 3 weeks Miami.
I'm certain of that.
Yeah, But that has changed. But anyway, but it's still, I like the energy that you're doing something outside of the, you know, sort of the textbook. And especially in a small. How many people live in Aalborg again?
200,000, I think. Little less, maybe.
But in summer, it's a lot more.
In summer, it's a lot more. Yeah.
The turban. Was it nerve-wracking talking to me for about an hour? Because we're nearing the hour, and
I think it was okay. I'm relaxed. I think it was okay. It was a good experience. Yeah. But normally, I know it's just talking to you.
Yeah.
But having this thing I have in between us, it's
the microphone.
The microphone.
Sexy microphone. Still.
Yeah, it's different. Yeah. It's just different. You know, it's just different.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm used to that. It's
and I'm not. Yeah. That's the whole thing.
But it's a nice way to actually keep all the content, all the things that we exchange. You know, sort of. Keeping them on the record for once.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I'm a very big podcast fan for many, many years, and that's exactly the kind of podcast that I like. So when people talk, and have a discussion and not a pure interview. And of course, it's always. I mean, our whole business is very ego driven. Sure.
But it is.
So that's
and
where
filled with people with big egos too.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
and you have to be very very confident to be successful, at least on the sales side, you know.
You really have to believe in it.
Yeah.
You really do. And in yourself too, actually. Yeah. You have to be a little eccentric and a little crazy to be a good art dealer.
Yeah, I personally don't think about that. Think that I'm eccentric,
you are.
I'm just me. You know?
Yeah, I mean, the same with me. But
yeah, people may call it. Eccentric.
Yeah.
Anything we left out? Anything you still want to talk about? Or
no, I'm pretty happy with the results as it is.
Yeah, me too.
It's been a good experience.
Yeah. Even though we're all a little bit tired and we have a gang of people sitting here, biting their nails because they can't say anything.
Yeah.
Being super quiet in the bank. For me, it's a wrap. I think I really enjoy talking to you anyways.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed this talk. I hope I'm pretty sure we've covered enough.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. Thank
and,
you.
You know, and you can always come back next year. And we.
That's what I was just thinking, because now I, actually it's new, this whole podcast and yeah. people discussing, talking kind of radio yeah. is new to me. And I've actually the last 6 months begun, started to listen a lot to just talk radio.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. Maybe it's because I'm getting older, but it's actually just beautiful. I like
it. It doesn't got nothing to do with age. I think it's just like you get so much information these days that when you just listen to it and don't have the visual interference,
yeah.
I think that helps to understand more things.
It does.
And I hear to listen to podcasts and I work. I mm-hmm. listen to podcasts when I'm on my bike.
Yeah.
When I'm walking this morning, for example, I walk to the gallery, which is a beautiful walk, you know, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's exactly the time I need to listen to the Stardust NBA podcast. I start when I leave the house, I come here and it's done. And
so you're actually looking forward to this walk so you can listen to this.
Course,
yeah.
So, and I think many people, it's just starting to grow, you know, to just being able to focus and listen. And, I think this is the 10th or 11th podcast now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like I'm getting bored at all of this. Still, as you've seen before, that technology sometimes still takes 5 minutes longer than expected to set up. But
maybe at some point I have a producer here who does all this shit.
Yeah. And I would listen to your podcasts too, not just because we are friends and work together, but because this is interesting to me. But unfortunately, I do not speak German.
Yeah, but fortunately enough, this is like already the fourth English podcast.
I know, two are published now,
but I mean, and this is, I think the mix between German and English is important, because I have a lot of people here in Hamburg who are saying, my English is not as good. I'm not so happy that you're doing them in English now, but then there's enough German for them, you know? Come on, seriously. If I publish an episode every week or every other week, it's so much material to listen to. It's almost an hour. You will not be able to listen to all of them. All right. Cool. Thank you. Safe travels back. You're going back to Aalborg today, right?
Yes.
I know you're going back to install tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Good talking to you.
Thank you.